In Luke chapter 17, Jesus asked the question, where are the nine? And we'll go ahead and give some context to this morning, and then try to pull some lessons away from it that we can put into practice in our lives to have a greater appreciation for what Jesus is willing to do for us through our faith. Here in Luke chapter 17, Jesus does some teaching. We find him doing teaching about temptation and forgiveness and faith. It's all part of what he's doing as he's traveling. And the context here is that we find him just sort of in the middle of traveling, and he's approached while traveling by 10 lepers. They come to him and make a request, and Jesus heals them. Much to Jesus' surprise, though, only one of them comes back to offer thanks and worship to Jesus and what he had done for him. And it's at that moment where Jesus asks, where are the nine? Certainly, there were another nine who should have come back and expressed the same kind of gratitude in worship of Jesus, but only one did. And we'll get into this a little bit here this morning. If you'd begin reading with me in verse 11, we'll notice verses 11 through 19. It says, on the way to Jerusalem, he was passing along between Samaria and Galilee. And as he entered a village, he was met by 10 lepers. One stood at a distance and lifted up their voices, saying, Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. And when he saw them, he said to them, go and show yourselves to the priest. And as they went, they were cleansed. Then one of them, when he saw that he was healed, turned back, praising God with a loud voice, and he fell on his face at Jesus' feet, giving him thanks. Now he was a Samaritan. Then Jesus answered, were not 10 cleansed? Where are the nine? Was no one found to return to give praise to God except this foreigner? And he said to him, rise and go your way. Your faith has made you well. There's really a lot that's happening in this single event. There's a number of things that we can see regarding the miracles that Jesus performs, and that is what stands out. But as we go a little deeper, we see that there are some overtones, spiritual overtones, that are a part of this, and we will focus on that. The 10 lepers, they approach and they ask Jesus for mercy. They don't go right up to him. Of course, they're at a distance. And we'd say, well, of course they were at a distance. They were lepers. And so they weren't permitted to be near people. They weren't permitted to be part of the community. You can go back into the Old Testament and you can read about the law regarding lepers and the attempts that were made to quarantine. I hate using that word. To quarantine the lepers. That word has a different resonance to us than it once did. But they at a distance, they asked Jesus, one asked Jesus to have mercy. They asked for mercy. And that's a significant way to ask for something from Jesus. They want mercy. Of course, Jesus knows right away what they want. They want to be healed. That's why we find all of these people who are sick going to Jesus. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for healing. And when Jesus heals, these miracles are symbols of what Jesus is really trying to give to man. They're signposts pointing to new creation, for example, if we want to use the idea that John brings to the forefront. And here we see more of that. So he cleanses 10, but only one expresses thanks, a Samaritan. And that's significant here, that detail. All of the details are important for our learning. What seems to be the problem that Jesus is getting at? What is this question really getting at? What impression does it leave you with? Why is Jesus is disappointed here? Why is he disappointed? Ingratitude, okay? Ingratitude. Anything else? A lack of humility. Mainly, I think when we look at this text, we take away this idea of ingratitude, and that I think that's certainly part of it. Though the one, at least he has the presence of mind to realize, hey, Jesus gave me what I wanted, gave me what I needed. And he couldn't help but go back. Not only did he go back, but he could. He could go back because he was cleansed. At the beginning of this, he's at a distance. He can't go near him. But now he can because he's been cleansed. Falls down at his feet. You have this idea of a much closer proximity to Jesus. Why are they going to the priests? Why does Jesus tell them to go to the priests? Okay, that's what they were supposed to do when they thought they were healed. The priests were the ones who regulated the law generally, and as it related to leprosy, the priests were the ones who presided over determining whether or not a person was infected, determining whether or not a person was healed if they were. And so just another example of how Jesus is trying to be compliant with the law. There were a lot of people who were saying Jesus is coming to just upend everything, to destroy the law. And that's certainly not what he's doing. But you get the sense that Jesus is looking for gratitude. When Jesus gives a blessing, when he gives us what we need, he's looking for gratitude in return. A couple of weeks ago in our study of the Psalms, we talked about thankfulness and gratitude. We looked at some Psalms of gratitude. And I don't want to repeat everything that we already have talked about regarding gratitude. Gratitude is not the only lesson that we can pull out of this text here this morning. What I want to look at are some other subjects, primarily the idea of faith and mercy and leprosy. So what are the spiritual overtones of this event? If we understand this miracle in the broader framework of miracles, that these miracles are showing us something greater that Jesus is doing. Does anything stand out? Do you read it a little differently? Would you read it a little differently than just looking at it, well, somebody who is sick is now well? There's trust and there's faith. It's faith that brings them to Jesus in the first place, right? Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. Those terms are significant. They're acknowledging Jesus as Lord, and they're looking for mercy. If they don't believe that Jesus can do anything for them, why would they go to the trouble of seeking Him out in the first place? The people who go looking to Jesus, they're people who are desperate. And they've learned that, well, here's a man who can heal. So it's out of that sense of desperation and out of a longing to be healed that they go. That's faith. Then, as Neil points out, you still have it. At the end, go show yourselves to the priest. So they do that. So there is a level of trust. Jesus gives them an instruction and they follow the instruction. And so faith is very much a part of. Any other themes you could pick up on? Yeah, that's significant. So Jesus' blessings are opening up to non-Jews. And so that's important. And of course, throughout his ministry, you see that kind of interaction. Not only that, I mean, in his teaching, he goes out of his way. To talk about Samaritans. He uses Samaritans. They become central characters in his teaching. He uses Samaritans to make these deep spiritual points. The parable of the good Jew, is that what? No, it's the parable of the good Samaritan. You could have made the same point about the parable of the good Jew, but it wasn't. Jesus says it's the parable of the good Samaritan. So he's doing it. It happens again. This Samaritan is the one who's grateful, so that's certainly at work. The kingdom is being opened up. He's expanding the kingdom here to be sure. What about leprosy? Can we connect leprosy to any particular theme? Sin, okay? Sin and leprosy. Leprosy was, of course, this terrible flesh-eating disease. It was a slow and agonizing, dehumanizing way to die. I mean, it literally, it ate away at the flesh. It's decay. And that's what the Bible tries to explain to us that sin does. We'll say sin brings death, and it does. It brings death, but not all at once. Sin brings decay, which culminates in death. And you say, well, yes, we physically have to die, but there is a spiritual death that sin causes that is far worse than physical death. John talks about, and Jesus in Revelation talk about the second death. That's what Jesus has come to save us from. But yet, leprosy is a symbol of that. A leper couldn't be with the community. Couldn't be with the community. They're on the outs. They have to be on the outside. They want to get to Jesus, but they can't be near Jesus because they could infect. They have to stay away. Well, sin creates distance. It creates separation. When we come to understand God's attitude towards sin, we recognize, well, God is a holy God. And so He cannot be in the presence of that which is defiled. So if we are defiled with sin, something has to be done. Or else we're going to remain on the outside. We can't have fellowship with Jesus or with people of Jesus. So what can be done with that? Well, you know, sin on its own, well, there's no cure. We can't fix ourselves. There's no remedy for it. Now, Jesus is the only one who can do something about it. He's the one who can reverse the decay, who can save us from death. The trouble of all of it is we don't always recognize that. The only way Jesus can do anything for us is if we get to a point of desperation, if we get to this point of these lepers, where all they want from Jesus is mercy. They want mercy. What is mercy? The bestowing of goodness on those who are not worthy of it? Any other way you would explain mercy? That's a good way to put it. A release from a debt we owe? Good example of mercy. Compassion. They want to receive something that they don't deserve. And that's what mercy is. Mercy is receiving something that we don't deserve. As it relates to sin, we don't deserve forgiveness. We don't deserve remission. We don't deserve cleansing. Yet Jesus gives that to us, is willing to give that to us if we respond to Him in faith. James, in James chapter 2 and verse 13, a little expression that is quite profound, is that mercy triumphs over justice. And that's a great way to explain what mercy is. James chapter 2 and verse 13, mercy triumphs over justice. Mercy rejoices over judgment, some translations use. The point is justice. Justice is punishing us for the sin we've committed, punishing us from the crimes we commit. Yet God, through Christ, is willing to say, no, I won't do that. I won't do that. I'll have mercy on you. And what you'll receive instead of judgment, instead of justice, instead of punishment, is pardon. Those are important ideas that the writers of the New Testament use to convey to us what the gospel does for us, what God does through Jesus. That uses language of a court. Uses language, legal language, that there is a sentence that has been pronounced against us, yet mercy can be received by God pardoning us because of what Jesus has done for us. So, to just summarize here, Jesus can cleanse our sin, and that's what the spotlight shines on here on this particular miracle. This is why Luke focuses in on it. Jesus can cleanse this impossible, incurable disease that prohibits us from having fellowship with Him and with His family. We haven't said a whole lot about this aspect of it. Faith is required to have our sins cleansed. Was faith required to have a miracle, to receive a miracle? No. Yes and no. Jesus' power to heal is without limitation. What is interesting here is that Jesus acknowledges the faith of these individuals. Faith was not a prerequisite to receive a miracle. You find Jesus, He's just healing. Sometimes, you know, that when it comes to miracles and people claiming to be able to perform miracles today, if they're unable to fix you, to heal you, you know, what's the problem? You don't have faith. You don't have faith. Incidentally, I have wondered where all our faith healers have been for the last 2 years. not much has been said or discussed about all of that. Well, if there ever was a time, ever a need, you know, a pandemic certainly presents an opportunity, but not much has happened on that front. Point, though, that I'm trying to make is that while faith was not required to receive a miracle, faith is required. Faith is a prerequisite of cleansing for our sins. You see these miracles. We're reading about these miracles. We see what's highlighted here. What's the purpose of all of that? You know, well, the purpose is to help bring us to the point of faith in Jesus. Look at what Jesus did. Look at what he was able to do. Time and again, we have a lot of miracles that he performs. A lot of signs showing that he can solve these deep spiritual problems for which we on our own have no solution. He can cleanse. Question is, will we believe? Will we approach him with the kind of faith these lepers did? Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. Do you have that kind of faith and humility? If you do, then Jesus can cleanse. When Paul explains what is available in Christ in the book of Romans, over and over and over again, Paul makes the point, the way you receive the blessings of what God offers through Christ is by faith. Without faith, none of it means anything. Without faith, we are just symbols of the second death. We're signs pointing to condemnation. But if we believe, then Jesus is willing and able to change all of that. Well, if we can approach him in faith, then our cleansing demands a certain kind of response. And this gets us back to where we began this morning in mentioning the issue of gratitude. If you receive cleansing from Jesus, then you know, what's your relationship to Jesus? A lot of people are like the nine. They receive their cleansing and then they just go on their way. I wonder if those of us who've received our cleansing, if Jesus has been looking for us in disappointment. Well, what happened to David? Didn't I cleanse David? Where is he? I mean, that's just how personally we need to be reading the scriptures, quite frankly. We can very clearly see all of the problems with the nine. They didn't have gratitude yet. Clearly. Now, what about ourselves in relation to that? You have the one, he's got new life. He's got new life. And he seeks to use that new life to worship the one who gave it to him. And that's keying in on us about the kind of response that we're to have if we receive the cleansing that Jesus offers by faith. Yeah. Yeah, that's the value of coming together so we don't forget about the mercy that has been extended to us and how we owe Jesus everything. Anything else? About where are the nine? Bob. Okay, good question. They're connected together. Grace is sort of the broad category. Grace is a gift. God has given us grace. Well, then what shape does grace take? If you go to Ephesians chapter 2, I think is where Paul talks about some of this. Grace, if we're to become more specific than just talking about, well, it's a gift. Well, what that grace looks like is mercy, for example. So mercy comes from grace. Grace is really, you know, grace is the well from which all of our blessings flow, to use it another way. Mercy and pardon, that puts a fine point on a very big and broad idea, if that explains things a little better. Or they're willing to be baptized, and they are, but then they just go back to life to the way it was. So this account is a good example of how all of that works together, how it's supposed to work together, and when it doesn't, Jesus' attitude toward it. Mercy is the administration of grace. Yeah, that's a good way to say it. All right, well, thanks for your help this morning. I hope the study that the last 2 months has been interesting. It's a different way to look at Jesus and to allow Him to probe the intentions of our heart. And that's what these questions accomplish. That's their design and intent. So certainly there's a lot that we can take away in terms of looking at the context of each of these things, but all of that's for nothing if we don't allow Jesus to ask us. And hopefully that was conveyed throughout this study. So I appreciate your attention.